Thank you. We also want to acknowledge one of our other colleagues in the room, Barbara Israel, Dr. Israel from the University of Michigan as well, a member of the Detroit Urban Research Center. This study was funded by the Health Impact Project, which is a collaboration of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and the Pew Charitable Trust, as well as from the University of Michigan Center for Advancing Research and Solutions for Society. We have no relationships to disclose. Detroit has a long history of innovation, hard work, perseverance. We have a lot of distinctive neighborhoods in Detroit, so a lot of strengths. However, over the past 50 years, like many other older cities across the world, it has experienced a substantial loss of jobs, people, and revenue. So our population went from 1.8 million at its height down to currently 700,000, getting closer to about 650,000 now, resulting in widespread vacancy and blight in a very historically vibrant city and neighborhoods as well. To address these challenges, the Detroit Future City, or the DFC, developed a strategic framework to guide land use planning in for the future of Detroit. DFC is not a plan. It's a guide for strategic decision making for Detroit's future over the next 50 years, for the long-term future of Detroit as a sustainable and thriving city for all. And one of the central challenges of this was to make sure that there was community voice and input into the design of this strategic framework for the city. And also, as part of this HIA, was to make sure that they took in consideration health, which was not part of the original DFC plan. So the overarching strategy for the DFC is to regenerate the city of Detroit by targeting resources into and investments primarily based on current vacancy rates. So stabilizing the most stable neighborhoods and going through a process of disinvesting in those parts of the neighborhood that have high vacancy. So the city got mapped into framework zones primarily based on vacancy rates to determine where and how to invest public, private, and philanthropic resources, and leading to a change in what's considered residential areas. In this map, you see the different residential zones. Purple are the high vacancy, gold is a moderate vacancy, and light blue is low vacancy. It's kind of the opposite of how we usually think of things as occupancy rates. This is a vacancy rate, right? In the high vacancy is defined as about a third of the parcels are vacant, which also means that two-thirds of them are occupied. And you can see in the map, kind of in the middle, there's two white sections. Those are actually two small little cities within the boundaries of Detroit, Hamtramck and Highland Park. Just kind of a strange situation, but that's Detroit. And in this, the whole study, there was very little consideration of the health of the 90-some thousand people that live in the high vacancy areas and what would happen with some of the strategic plans. So a number of longtime community activists and academic partners that are affiliated with the Detroit Urban Research Center decided to carry out a health impact assessment of the DFC. This was a partnership of health and community organizations, academic researchers, and data specialists. And the steering committee members were all really leaders in their fields and had been engaged in many citywide and neighborhood-based planning initiatives for many years. Several have been integrally involved in the DFC. I myself had played a role as what they call the process leaders. Those were community leaders throughout the city whose primary role was to make sure that the community voice was at the table during the development of this framework. And then in addition, We also had an expert on HIA who worked closely with us to help plan and carry out the HIA. And this group, the DHIA, is an affiliated partnership of the Detroit Urban Research Center, which conducts community-based participatory research in Detroit for the past 20 years. So the HIA really focused on city systems element of the DFC plan, or rather framework, and looking at city services and the infrastructure, which are the very foundation of life in a neighborhood. Without those city services, it's very difficult to live in a community. So things like street lights, roads, sewage, waste removal, blight removal, water, all of those kinds of things that determine the quality of life for communities and have a substantial impact on the trajectory of that neighborhood and the people that live there. So the DFC proposed a strategic renewal of the city systems based on vacancy zones. So investing more resources in populated areas. This was because, as many people know, Detroit is struggling with severe financial constraints. So having to make some decisions on where do you invest with the limited resources that the city has in order to make the city more sustainable for the people who live there. So as a result, they developed this map that would involve winding down in some areas or ramping up city services in other areas over the coming decades. So the highest vacancy zones in neighborhoods are slated for replace, repurpose, or decommission of all city services. In moderate vacancy, they'll be reducing and just kind of maintaining them where they are. In more stable parts of the city, they're talking about renewing and maintaining them, and where there's very low vacancy or high occupancy rates, it's upgrading and maintaining. So we really focused the HIA on the impact of this strategy in the high vacancy neighborhoods, and looking at particularly at public lighting and the demolition strategy to remove blight. One of the things that, so in the far left column is the area that we really focus the HIA on. And one of the things that we also know is that investment in the city of Detroit, like many other places, was not distributed equally. There's been a long history of redlining based on race and ethnicity in the city of Detroit. And a lot of the disinvestment that shows up is in those areas where that long history of disinvestment has occurred, which really is some of the rationale for continuing disinvestment and create kind of this vicious cycle of disinvestment. So we were looking at some of the potential impacts, both positive and negative, of what happens when you disinvest in those neighborhoods, on what's happening to the people who live there, and whether or not they choose to stay or move out of the community, and trying to make recommendations based on those findings to ensure that we maximize the health and equity benefits for all of the people who live in Detroit.
Okay, so we did a health impact assessment. How many of you here are familiar with health impact assessment? So that was the theme of the session here. Okay, so then you know that health impact assessment is a systematic approach to analyzing what are the potential health impacts of a proposal, a plan, a policy before it's implemented, so that you can anticipate what are the maximum or what are the potential negatives and positives, and recommend how to maximize health across the way. So we engaged in a typical health impact assessment using the five stages of HIA and a lot of engagement, as Angie mentioned, through our steering committee. We used mostly existing data, an extensive literature review, and what we did was a strategic HIA. So we're looking at really developing a framework for how these kind of regeneration policies would affect health. So HIA starts out with looking at existing conditions and doing a profile of the affected neighborhood. We're only going to go through a few of the characteristics of the neighborhood here, But the key issue is around neighborhood conditions around vacancy and blight. So we're showing you a picture here. So the green areas, that's the proportion of structure occupancy. In other words, that dark green area is the about 30% of the structures or the houses are occupied. And I'm sure you've all seen the pictures of blight in Detroit, right? Blocks, no houses. Well, in fact, look at the lighter color of green. So 2/3 of the houses are occupied, and about 44% of those are occupied by owners. If you look across into the sort of brownish area, that's the condition of the houses that are remaining. You'll see the dark color again are those houses or structures that are in poor and suggest demolition category. The others are in fair or good condition. Sociodemographic profile. In fact, the high vacancy zone or neighborhoods house the largest proportion of low-income residents and households in the city. It's a very high economic stress area. So about 13, the zone holds about 13% of the population. Median income, you can see, is about $20,000, with nearly half of the households below the poverty line. So we didn't put race up here. It's a predominantly African-American city, but here's the importance of also looking at smaller neighborhoods. So we're focused on the high vacancy neighborhood, but Latino population is not included here. The other ones in the other neighborhood, in all the neighborhoods, African-Americans are distributed fairly evenly across the neighborhoods, with the exception of Latinos, who are mainly concentrated in the moderate vacancy zone and to a lesser extent in high vacancy, almost none in the low vacancy. So you can see that the DFC plan would pretty much exclude benefits to all of the Latino community. Health profile, just giving you a snapshot here of mortality. So this graph shows all-cause mortality by framework zone. Again, the purple is the high vacancy zone. It's quite a bit higher than Detroit as a whole. And compared to the national level, which is in green, the mortality in the high zone is more than 1.5 times the national mortality rate. If you look on the other side, the mortality rate also is highest in the zone for all the major causes of death in Detroit, the five major causes with the exception of cancer. And of particular note is the heart disease death rate, which is over twice the national rate. So another important aspect of the health profile, I mentioned cancer. In fact, the high vacancy zone has the lowest cancer incident rate for all causes of cancer except for lung cancer, which is highest in the vacancy zone. And that coincides with the different kinds of exposures that occur. Again, it's the importance, as was mentioned earlier, of looking more closely at differences between neighborhoods and within neighborhoods. Lead poisoning is extraordinarily high. So of the children tested in Detroit, about 26% of children who were tested who live in the HV zone, called HV, high vacancy, have elevated lead levels. And this is important not only because they're continuing to be exposed to poor and deteriorating housing, but also if demolitions occur and are not protected, they'll be increasingly exposed to lead. And you know, lead, even as some of you know, even very low levels of lead exposure can have permanent impacts. They're not reversible, have a lot of impacts on child neurological development, school outcomes, all those kind of things that are then used as rationalizations for all kinds of things. Other outcomes was a problem for the HIA because you had mentioned zip codes. In fact, Detroit covers 139 square miles. There are 42 zip codes. There are thousands of block groups. So only being able to get health data at the zip code level for outcomes meant we could not break it down by zone. So we're not going to go through this whole model, but wanted to show you that we developed a conceptual model based on the literature and the existing evidence of what might be the potential health impacts of this kind of infrastructure strategy on those in the high vacancy zone. As you can see, we outline three major neighborhood level impacts that we prioritize: neighborhood stability, integrity, and that's really the social fabric and the built fabric of neighborhoods. You know, how densely populated it is, what's really the livability of a neighborhood. Closely related is neighborhood safety, and actually its unsafety is a major concern, lack of safety. So we look particularly at blight and vacancy and crime. The other areas, environmental conditions, and you can see how they lead really in the pathways to guide our impact assessment. So a snapshot of some of our findings around neighborhood stability and integrity. As we mentioned, that 70% of homes are occupied, and actually this policy will change the fabric of Detroit neighborhoods. This social fabric is really what supports people's day-to-day living through social support. It also provides the basis for community organizing, for planning and changing your neighborhood. So that the adverse impacts would be disruption of social ties and resources with this continuing deterioration, and of course the financial instability and stress of having your neighborhood identified as one, you know, that's not going to exist in the future. Possible beneficial impacts would be if people are mobilizing for support and action, or if they move and move into improved circumstances. We also looked at safety and environmental conditions. You can see them here. It would be increased fear and crime. And then we looked more closely at demolition. And so we found strong evidence for a number of these potential health impacts.
So some of the other potential health impacts, of course, have to do with this displacement and the continued decline of the infrastructure as a result of that, where people are no longer able to live in unsupported communities. There are right now 35,000 homes that are additional homes that are risking foreclosure this year, mostly due to tax foreclosures. And within there, there's a lot of children and elderly, over almost 7,000 children and about 1,500 elderly who are at a particular risk. This map shows the density of vacancies. So the darker the color, the higher level of vacancies. And when people are being left stranded in the area or forced to move, the adverse impacts also includes the loss of supportive networks. The value of their home goes down because there also aren't loans available for home improvement in those areas. The stress and cost of relocation, nobody is paying people to relocate. So if you're stuck there, you're stuck. Homelessness, mental, physical, and child school outcomes. Again, as Chris mentioned, there may be some beneficial incomes if you're able to relocate to an improved area. And just as an example of how these things are playing out currently, I was just told a story a couple days ago of a friend of mine's mother who lives in one of the high vacancy areas, who's an elderly woman. She lives in a home where her children grew up. Her husband passed away. She has no street lights. The sewage and water, not the water, but the sewage has been disconnected from their area. And she was told her taxes are about to go up to cover the additional costs of having to provide some city services for her area since it's a high vacancy area. Again, these conditions that are highly compromised for all these people will continue to be detrimental to people with poor health outcomes. We know that communities sometimes have very intact social networks and organizations and strengths that can help to buffer some of these things. We have a lot of people in the city of Detroit who work very, very hard and are warriors and soldiers who've been there for a long time, who refuse to give up and are working closer and closer together to try to counteract some of these things. Every neighborhood is different. No one size fits all, so some of the decisions have to be made based on a smaller level, a community level. And some of these current decisions that are being made now are going to be affecting us for a long time in the future. So some of our some of our key recommendations is just making sure that those people who are left in those areas have the support and the finances needed so that they won't, their health won't continue to deteriorate, and to enact policies that can kind of mitigate some of these negative impacts, making sure that the community has a voice in the decision making, that current residents are able to benefit from this regeneration. I think we're almost out of time, so I just want to mention that that we had a lot of strengths by bringing together all these different people together, but there was also a challenge because this framework was developed with philanthropic money by an entity that was private and was not part of the formal city structure. So trying to figure out who was making what decision at what level was very, very difficult and still remains pretty ambiguous. Just a quote from our former mayor and former executive director of Detroit Future City.